Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcasts. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.
Thank you for coming on with me today. Jazz is a diverse artist with talents and skills in writing, styling, interior design, film production, photography, and the list goes on. She is also a former educator of the arts, and she will be sharing with us today about her brand, painting, and all that's Jazz. So, Jazz, can you start off by telling me what is painting and all that's Jazz, and what inspired such a unique name?
Okay, so it's painting and all that Jazz, and it started off as a paint party business in 2016. A friend of mine reached out and knew that I was an art teacher, and she wanted to have a paint party birthday. And at first, I was like, well, I've never done that before, and everybody had heard of painting with a twist, right? But she wanted to use me. She wanted me to come to her, pre-draw on all the canvases and host the party. I was nervous about it at first, but I decided to say yeah, and after that party, it just took off from there. So from about 2016 to 2018, I had a mobile paint party business until I kind of just got tired of it. I kind of lost my passion for it, and I just stopped altogether. But I kept the name, and I kind of just rebranded myself as a visual artist who sells my artwork. And lately, I've been putting my artwork on t-shirts, so I'm getting into the apparel portion of it. My mom actually thought of the name, painting and all that Jazz. She's really creative, and I told her that I was going to have this business, and I couldn't think of a catchy name. So painting and all that Jazz, as you stated in the intro, like, I'm interested in a lot of different things, have my foot in a lot of different things. And so when people say the phrase and all that Jazz, it's just a mixture of everything that, you know, you're a part of. So I paint, and I do a lot of other stuff, too.
And you have a website for yes. all of that.
Uh-huh. Painting and all that jazz.com.
Okay. So you have a piece called Girlfriends.
Uh-huh.
You have various beautiful black women on that piece. Can you tell me what was your creative thought process when you created that piece?
Okay, so Girlfriends, I made that piece. I wanted that to be a standout piece when I was getting ready for my 30th birthday party, which was an art show. And I wanted to have 30 pieces a part of the art show. So that one I knew I wanted to be special. It was one of the largest pieces that I did, and it was a representation of me and my best friends. So we've been friends since we were about, I think, 10, the four of us. And I just wanted to, you know, basically show them how special they were to me and represent them in a beautiful way. Everybody has a unique look. The backgrounds behind each lady is different. Just it's kind of like a representation of the different personalities, the different dynamics of who each woman is, and the fact that each woman is just layered in general, so not just one-sided. But that was just basically it. It was just a representation of the women that I'm closest to. So
you're not on there. It was you're actually on there.
I'm the fourth one.
Okay,
the one at the very end. So you have Yamika, Katidra, Chelsea, then me. So yeah. And they're not like exact depictions. They don't look exactly like us. I guess you can look at it like maybe like a cartoon style, basically.
Right.
But it's like a loose representation of each of us. So yeah.
Okay. So you are allowed to be delicate and strong, simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
Those words are what you put on your piece titled Man.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to go into detail about that.
Okay, so this is one of my favorite pieces to be able to do, and it's like a conversation starter. It brings up a lot of different opinions by a lot of different people. So my creative process behind making this piece was basically that I wanted men black men especially to understand that they are allowed the full human experience.
Mm-hmm.
Masculinity, that people talk about toxic masculinity and talk about how, you know, men feel as if like they can't cry, show any emotion, feel upset, or express what emotions they're feeling. And I just wanted it to be okay for men to know that, you know, if you feel sad, you can express that. And I won't look at you as a weak person because you are a representation of a full human being. So I just think it's unfair that men feel like they can't be their full selves. And so we know that men are strong, obviously, physically, and they have to be strong mentally as well. But on the other side of that, you're allowed to be delicate. And that doesn't, and I've had so many people say, oh, delicate, you mean I can be gay? Like, what? That's backwards thinking. That's definitely not what I meant. And I purposely put the flowers within his beard. It's just like a over-representation of me enforcing the fact that you can be delicate like a flower. But it doesn't mean you're soft, if right. That makes any sense. So,
yeah. I saw a man cry once.
Oh, just once?
Yes, it's so rare. They don't cry. And he didn't want me to tell anyone. But nothing's wrong with that.
It's not. But they're programmed. I think it's a societal thing. They're just programmed and feel like I can't show any emotion. That's weak. And honestly, I feel like strength comes from knowing that you can be your full self and express whatever you feel, whatever it looks like. That doesn't take away from who you are.
Okay, so you used a quote from the legendary Nina Simone, which states, "An artist's duty, as far as I'm concerned, is to reflect the times." Why is it so important for you to capture moments in time through your art, as you did with the Target piece that you created?
I think it's important to reflect the times because at some point, what you do is going to be a part of history, and people are going to look back on these remnants of what's left behind as a reference to history itself. History won't just be in the books. It'll be in everything. So as far as the clothes people wore, the art that was made, the music, all of that, I think it's all a great reference point to the past. And I think it's important to make these notes in history because it's kind of like it's telling, you know, to what side of history you want to be on. Were you somebody that just shut up and didn't say anything and didn't help to change the trajectory of what's going on? Or were you somebody that used your particular gift to make some noise? And so that's why I feel like it's important for artists, but anybody with any set of skills, to use those set of skills to help change the problem or help fix the problem. So with my piece Target, I thought it was very timely because of what happened with the Target incident right after the George Floyd murder. You know, people were upset because Target had been looted, and I don't remember if it was burned down or whatever, but Target, they have enough money to be able to, you know, fix what was broken. But the lives of black men who are targets of police brutality, they don't get to come back after being murdered, you know. So they may be upset about a Target being looted, but black men are tired of being targets by the police. So,
and I just had a conversation about that on my last show, mm-hmm. where I had guests who say that you shouldn't burn, like, you can protest, but you shouldn't burn down buildings and things of that nature. But as you said, why not? Mm-hmm. Because it doesn't take away from the fact that you killed innocent black people. Mm-hmm. So me burning up a Target is the least of our concern, because there's a bigger issue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's like sometimes they'll just be casualties of war, and Target was one of them. Exactly. They'll be okay.
Okay. Do you have any words of encouragement for other artists who admire and are influenced by your work?
Words of encouragement. I would just say to be true to yourself. And, excuse me, that may sound, excuse me, cliche, but a lot of the times people can look at what's popular and say, if I want to be popular too, I'll copy that. And they may give like a second-rate version of what's popular rather than being the best at what it is they're gifted with. And I would always tell my students, don't sit next to somebody and because I gave this student a compliment, you say, okay, well, I got to do it like that if I want her to clap for me or be proud of me. What I always told my students was, so I have a room full of 35 kids. The prize in that is that I have 35 individuals with 35 different life experiences and just unique ideas. So the prize is getting to see 35 different versions of what I'm asking for. And so I would fuss at them when they copied off of each other and I've seen the same thing 25 times. Like, I'm looking for you to be you. So that's what it comes down to for me. Do you. That's it. Just do you. And don't feel like you have to try to keep up in the race by doing what's popular.
There you have it, folks. Do you. I want to thank Jazz for coming on the show today. Thank you, Jasmine.
Thank you for having me. This was so cool.
Next on the show, we will have Tyshawn Boykins and Jordan Austin here today to discuss with us what it's like to be young Black men in America today. We'll be right back on the Kendall Doyle Show.
Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Stat, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcast. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.
Welcome back, you guys, to the Kendall Doyle Show. We have very special guests today with us. We have Jordan Austin. How are you?
Hey, how you doing?
We have Tyshawn Boykins. How are you?
I'm fine.
And we still have Jasmine hanging out with us. So today we're going to discuss what's life like being youthful young Black men today in America. You guys, we want to talk about the issue that we see today with inequality when it comes to us Black people. And I want to start off with you, Tyshawn. I want to know, back in 2012, there was a young boy by the age of 17 who was murdered while walking back home from the store in a gated community with his hood on. His name was Trayvon Martin. And I want to know, what was your initial thoughts when you heard about this story?
Infuriate, as most people should be. I grew up in a country town, but it was a lot of Black people as well. But, you know, it's a typical story, how we profiled. And then I felt hopeless at the same time because I didn't feel like he was going to get justice for what happened to him.
Okay. All right, Jordan, I want to know, have you ever had a conversation with your parents or family member or mentor on how to properly conduct yourself if you're pulled over by a police officer?
Of course. Every time I'm going somewhere, it's like it's a ritual. And it's sad because I feel like somebody with an, what's the proper way to say this, a Caucasian young teenage boy doesn't have to get the same set of rules that I get before I go somewhere and go out. It's when you get pulled over, yes sir, no sir, hands on the steering wheel, no blinking, no extra, no smells in the car, no nothing in the car. Don't give them any extra reason to mess with you. Don't give them any extra reason, because my dad always say, we can handle it downtown, but we can't handle it downtown in the street. That's where you'll die.
So have you ever been in that situation?
Yes, of course. I can remember the first time I got pulled over. It was in my 95 Maxima. I remember the first time I got pulled over. I was so nervous. It was a Black Lancaster Tahoe behind me. I called my mama. So she heard, but she could hear the scariness in my voice. She came. Then two officers came. I'm just shaking. I'm like, but this is not normal. We're not supposed to be scared of the police. I'm not supposed to sit at the stoplight and, oh, is he looking at me? Oh, I hope my window not too. That's not how it's supposed to be. You're supposed to protect and serve us. I should not be afraid of you.
Right. What about you, Tyshawn? Have you ever had an encounter with the police?
Yeah, I had a constant encounter with the police. I got pulled over frequently. They knew my car in Lancaster or whatnot. But I remember one time in particular, I got pulled over, did nothing wrong. It was somebody car hopping in my neighborhood or whatever. The police followed me or whatever. He pulled me out the car. But I wasn't more so nervous. Because I already knew the protocol of, you know, what to expect, because the police, were not here to put to protect when they derive from slave patrol and things of that sort. So, and when they written them into the Constitution or whatnot, they wasn't talking about my people. My people had to get added into the Constitution, the 14th Amendment, and things like that. So, I was out, and I'm from a country town, so I'm already, taught about it, you know?
Okay. I want all of you guys to put your input on this. So, I want to know if you guys, do you honestly believe that there's white privilege? And if so, have there ever been an incident that you can tell us all about?
I believe 100% that is white privilege. I can't tell you about an incident, but is there?
I definitely believe it's white privilege. I had went to a white school in Oklahoma, a D2. And the quarterback, we was lifting weights or whatnot. The quarterback was white. He was Caucasian. And he came at me a certain way. He approached me. I was calm, copacetic. But once he approached me, I got back with him, you know. And the trainer of the room came and was like, "Hey, you in my office right now. I need to talk to you," things of that sort. And it just took me back, because I'm like, you don't even know the situation. And the black dude was trying to, the guy that facilitates us while we work out came and was like, "Nah, he wasn't in the wrong." He approached him and things like that. And then when he found out he was in the wrong, he kind of didn't apologize. He was like, "Oh, go back and work out," you know, mm-hmm. instead of saying, "My bad for coming at you that way," and things of that sort.
What about you, Jazz?
I believe that white privilege exists. The frustrating part is when white people don't acknowledge the fact that it's true and how they've benefited from white privilege. You know, it's just like a sense of entitlement some white people have. And it's frustrating. And it's just like, where does solving the issue start? Because it's just so deeply ingrained in our nation's history. It's just something you can't fix overnight, but it exists. I mean, just because people don't acknowledge it, or white people don't acknowledge it, doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. So, yeah,
I have a question about that. With white privilege, do you feel we give in power to it? Because, like, you remember, like, well, no, that's not the question. Do you think segregation hurted us because we had a lot of black-owned businesses and black bus stations and taxes and things like that? So do you think once we integrated, that's when white privilege became even more prevalent in our society?
I can say yes and no. I say yes, because it's like your question is like, obviously, like, yeah. Integration made them feel like this was ours, and how dare you try to have
the same as me.
Like, you can't, what you are and who I am are not equal, so you can't have what I have equally. And then before that, it's like, when you think about segregation and black schools and white schools, how white schools are automatically funded and better overall, and black schools weren't. Still to this day, it's some HBCUs that look run down, and it's a historic fact. So I think it's just like I said, it just runs deep. But I've heard people say about segregation that was one of the biggest mistakes we made as a people. Like, we should have stayed the way it was. But I mean, it was separate, but was it equal? And that's the question.
Mm-hmm. I kind of agree segregation did set us back, because it took away black ownership. As much as we had it. But at the same time, when you talk about it from the way of the funding and the school and stuff like that, of course, it's not even close.
Yeah, that's still to this day. You can go to high school. You can go to Sauk. Look at Sauk. Sauk is just now getting a new school because the school was rat infested.
But historically, all those schools were white schools back in the day. So, and it's just like, once they saw these people moving out and these people moving in, oh, we don't have to fix the problem because it's them, I guess you can say, until people started making noise and demanding change.
Okay, so you're a black woman. I'm a black woman. Do you feel that we are just as, do you feel that we are just as equally unprotected as the men?
Heck yeah. Yeah, I do. And I hate when it becomes a battle between the two. Like, I've seen recently conversations about black women not feeling protected and some black men having a rebuttal that, well, if you submit, then I would protect you. Why is it just not an innate, you know, reaction mm-hmm. to wanting to defend and protect a woman that looks like you? I definitely feel like it's the same. We can list stories and stories just like they can. And you don't want to, diminish somebody else's experience by telling them, no, yours doesn't count because I went through this. It's like, we just all have to, acknowledge each other's deeply rooted pain, you know, and experiences.
What about you guys? Do y'all feel that we as black women are just as equally unprotected?
Of course. You have definitely. The same skin tone. Mm-hmm. It's the skin tone, not the race. I mean, not the gender.
Okay. So, there is a quote by my favorite person, Tupac, who says, just because I'm telling a man to stop getting his head kicked in by the police and take the gun he will use to kill his brother in a second and kill the cop that's killing you, your family, and everybody else on the block. If that ain't positive, crack doesn't sell. Why do you think it's so easy for some black men to kill someone who look like them and go through the same struggle as them as it is to kill the ones who are oppressing them?
I'm not going to try to keep it professional anymore, because white people have put us in that mind frame. And the people that do that, it's worked on, because they're killing people on small problems as a woman or a small issue that could have been talked about, or just small things, or clothes, or I thought they looked at me, or I thought this was small things you will take his life for. You understand what I'm saying? I kind of forgot the question a little. That's okay. I'll play a slip. Can you repeat it again?
So the question was, why do you think it's okay? Well, not okay, but why do you think that us as black people or mm-hmm. black men will kill someone who look like them in a second instead of killing?
Yeah, because and then we've been taught to always be in competition. That's things when they were selling slaves. You're better than you because you're going to be in the house. Are you better than you because you can use your weight better. You can move muscle better. You understand what I'm saying? We've always been in competition, been taught to be in competition. And so now that's just being relevant in today's society with clothes, shoes, cars, the haircut.
I believe, me personally, that's like black on black crime, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's just proximity. That's just who's closest to you. If you put poor people in a poor condition with a poor mind state, he's right here. I don't value anything. I'm poor. We don't know what's better. It's going to be easier for me to take his life. Opposed to when it comes to a white man, it's more so you see them like they get away with killing you. If this black man kill you, either you feel like it's going to be street justice or he going to go to jail for life. I'm not saying it's right and I'm not saying it's okay, you know, but mm-hmm. people are just in an oppressive mind state, and when you put them in a poor thing, you got to take them out of survival mode. They in constant survival mode.
Right.
From everybody around them, you know, and it's just going to put the situation into that type of perspective.
Okay. So the same colorism that is inflicted upon African Americans when it comes to Caucasians and how they look down on us because of the skin, because of the tone of our skin color. Do you think as in the black community, we do the same when it comes to dark skinned females? Like, it's always, I'm sure you have heard it and seen it before. It's like, if she's a dark-skinned female, she's more inferior than a lighter.
Right. I was watching How to Get Away with Murder the other day with Viola Davis, and a Mexican guy actually hit on her. And she said that, it was a crippled man who wanted to sue a woman because the dating app didn't, like, put him with nicer women that he wanted to be with. And he was like, he felt oppressed. He felt like he didn't want to be wanted Viola Davis told him, I'm a black, dark-skinned woman. Men see me as inferior. Men are scared of me. They don't find me attractive. And even today, when you go on Twitter, you'll see a dark-skinned girl in four pictures of it. She got 35,000 retweets because she's considered a fine light skin. I mean, a fine dark skin. Or she's one of the bad dark skins like that. That's another reason we've conditioned ourselves, or we're letting that horrible thing try to teach us that's how we're supposed to be. No. You fine if you light, you're fine if you're dark, you're fine if you're fine. Simple.
Yeah.
So it's not a color thing. It's about how you look.
It's about how you look.
And I have a dark skin. She's very melanin.
Yeah, are we talking to Barbie? Barbie looks very good.
Her name is Brianna.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's very melanin. And she told me she has never wanted to be a lighter skin tone. Like, even though people have made jokes that she's the color of midnight and stuff like that, she said she has never wanted to be a lighter skin tone. And we had a conversation with my dad about it, and he said, because dark-skinned girls who are dark, if they pretty, that's all that matters. They don't care about, you know, it be the ones that don't. But
well, I mean, I can't say that. I can't agree with it. You know, I can't invalidate anybody's, how they feel that they've been treated with their skin tone. I love all women of all shades, all shapes and sizes. We don't discriminate over here, baby. But, you know, I can't sit there and say they didn't feel that, or if they not pretty enough or anything like that. You pretty to somebody, you might not be my type. I don't have a type, you know, but I might not like who you is as a person, but I don't discriminate skin color, and I won't say that they don't go through things and feel things of their skin color, because I feel things from my skin color, and I'm not even dark enough to them, so I'm not going to invalidate how they feel or anything like that.
So when we see these successful black men make it to the NFL or the NBA, and they get these Caucasian women or Spanish women who look nothing like their mothers or look nothing like their sisters, do you think it's like a form of them not loving us as black women? Or
I feel like that right there is media push. 81% of black men that go to college marry black women who are successful, marry black women. I feel like the media pushes and doesn't show or highlight how many black men are with black women. And when you focus on them, half them boys grew up in a suburb, and all they been around is white women, so they don't know about the cocoa butter. They don't
yeah, because that's I have people that I go to school with, like, and he's the dude darker than me, and he said, yeah, I don't really talk to black girls. I said, huh? He's the guy got the hair like me, you know, the B4C4, whatever, you know, it is, and he said, yeah, I don't talk to black girls. I only date white girls. I said, what school did you go to? He said, I went to a private. That's all you had to say, sir. We'll see you next week.
I think it's about liking yourself, too. Like, how much do you love and appreciate the way you look? And if you hate yourself so much that you don't want to be with someone that looks like you, it'll show, you know, right. By saying, I only date this. Mm-hmm. It almost comes like, for some men, like a status symbol. Like,
right.
To say, okay, I have a very light skinned woman. Or have a white woman, you know, and it's just like that's very telling about, in my opinion, how they feel about themselves. Not to say that all men who date white women or have fallen in love with a white woman, they hate black women. That's not the case. But just with the conversation that we're having, it's been the case a lot of the time. This conversation, you know, comes up a lot. And, you know, Jordan is actually my brother. I don't know if people have put two and two together, but when he was little, I would say maybe middle school age, he had a preference, and nothing is wrong with the preference. And I don't know if he remembers this or not, but he had a preference. He was like, oh yeah, I only like light-skinned girls. And I was like, ooh, I hate the way that sounds. I was like, let me educate you.
So she made me watch a movie.
So I made him watch a documentary. It was called Dark Girls, I think it was called. Yeah. Like Oprah Winfrey and them put it together, and it talked about the struggle of darker women in society. And I was so excited because I helped change his perspective, and he was so young, and he didn't look at women of a darker skin tone as, you know, a bad thing. You know, his mind was open to everybody, and he realized how ridiculous it sounded. Nothing is wrong with being attracted to who you're attracted to, but don't make it as if women that don't look like that are bad, you know. Mm-hmm. And right. So it was awesome to see his perspective change and be open to everyone.
I feel like what you said when you say somebody hate themselves. Mm-hmm. I feel like if you went to a white school or whatnot, you feel like, you know.
Yeah, because it's not a you're not the majority. So it's mm-hmm. like exactly.
Me, I grew up around black women. I grew up around, you know, hot cones on the stove and mm-hmm. things like that. So I just love black women. I appreciate Marshall, them. Texas. I like them and things like that. So it's like, I feel like if you don't like black women, it's because you haven't experienced the black culture. Mm-hmm. You haven't experienced mm-hmm. it in a sort. So it's like, we don't discriminate with women.
Awesome. Come on, East Texas.
Marshall, Texas, if you did not hear me the first time.
I want to end this off by knowing how each one of us can contribute to making a difference so that our future sons and daughters won't have to live in a society where they're being preyed on because of the color of their skin.
Just, I would say just treat everybody. And it's been on the classroom walls when you was in fifth grade. But for real, treat everyone how you want to be treated. Because I've been learning this. Who told me that? My brother. It's like, how you even talk to people, you got to lead with love. Lead with love and see where that'll get you. Don't worry about how that person came at you or how that person talked to you or how they've been looking at you. Lead with love and see where that'll get you, besides trying to lead with to match with that person, the energy that person gave you, and matching. Is you just matching, you lighting the fire. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's good.
I mean, I could see where he was coming from and things like that, but what I feel like I could do different is get into a place of power and have money and influence and put money back into our community, things like that, and then have a leadership thing where we teaching black boys that it's all right to be police officers and police the community you come from and things of that sort, because these police is not from these communities that they policing, so they mm-hmm. already scared. They done watch movies about growing up in the hood and things like that. They don't know us. They feel scared, and they scared. That's all they is scared.
That's it.
So I can't lead with love and you coming with fear.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You get what I'm saying? Because you will kill who you fear. Mm-hmm. So my thing is, we got to change the community. I feel like black men we are taking a step in becoming police our communities and things mm-hmm. of that sort, you know?
Yes.
Oh, that's a tough question to answer, because it's like, you know, how do we change the other people's hearts? How do we make them fully understand that what you're doing is wrong? It's hateful, it's evil, and it's just like, if generations and generations are being taught the same thing and the pain of the way we've been treated didn't matter enough for you to change or stop teaching that behavior, it's like I feel like at a loss, like mm-hmm. I don't know what to do to fix them. But what I feel like we can do for our children is just to love ourselves so much that they love themselves and they don't look at themselves as a burden or or less than, I guess you could say, or inferior. They look at themselves as strong, powerful beings that can do anything and change the world.
And that has to start at home. One thing I can about with our parents, well, with children's parents, one thing I can say about my dad, and he's a black dad with a black daughter, anytime Jasmine puts on clothes, anytime she cooks a meal, anytime she breathes, that was great, Jazz. I like how you did it. Hey, that Jazz, you're beautiful. Jazz, you look good, girl. Hey, Jazz, I like that spaghetti. Spaghetti had no taste, but he gonna like it for his daughter. You understand what I'm saying? Like, he gonna love his daughter because he has a black daughter. He wants her to know she's loved. He wants her to know that she needs to go nowhere else hunting for love or hunting for her being enough. No, she knows she enough from her dad.
And I feel like that's what I'm saying. I don't want to teach my kids to feel like you have to be accepted by mm-hmm. white society. I want them to right. just know
and be yourself.
In the room, baby, you black, and if they don't like you, they don't like you. But I want to create places of power where our people can come and feel naturally comfortable. Mm-hmm. So ownership.
Okay, and for me, I just want, like you said, I want to invest in black business. Like, you have a brand. Mm-hmm. Y'all are two business, young black businessmen who are educated. Like, that type of dignity and that type of respect as black men, they don't look at us like that. They look at us like hoodlums, like we don't do anything. But when we come in a room and we walk in a room with confidence and educated, then that gives off a different perspective of who we are. So that's basically what I want to instill in my kids, in my future the future generation that's coming after us. So that's all we have for you guys today. I want to thank each of you for coming on the show with me. I really, really enjoyed you guys.
No, thank you for having me.
Jordan. Jordan, I want to thank you for coming. I want to thank you, Tyshawn, and I want to thank you, Jasmine. So that is it for tonight, and we will see you guys back here again next week on the Kendall Doyle Show.
Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Stat, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcast. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.